This is Mark Steiner. That's the In Crowd. Ramsey Lewis Trio. Ramsey Lewis, born on this day in 1935. Happy birthday, Ramsey Lewis.
What about the other happy birthday?
What? You can say it. You're here now. Just say we got to get. We got to jump into the conversation, but very quickly. Come on.
Happy birthday, Pam Grier.
I don't know how we left that out of our day in history. Charles Robinson, political and business correspondent for the Maryland Public Television, and Brian Sears, government reporter for the. I said it just like Ronald Reagan. Government reporter for the Daily Record. Brian, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number. Write us here at talk at steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888 is the number. So let's talk about these vetoes. Where do we want to begin?
Well, first of all, you know, the governor is not in the country. He's in Asia.
Well, he could be in Asia.
Well, you know, basically you veto something and you leave the country. You're okay with that, Brian?
Well, look, I mean, it's not for me to be okay or not okay with it, but there was a timeline for which he had to do this, and I think the 29th was the drop-dead date on all of these vetoes. I don't know that it necessarily came as a surprise that, you know, that elected officials will do things like this and then have other things to do. I mean, you could also make the argument that he dropped it on the Memorial Day weekend. I mean, I don't know that necessarily the timing speaks to anything nefarious. I mean, it just is what it is.
Let's talk about the political effect of his vetoes and why you think they happened and what they meant. And when we look at the combination of the veto on the felon's right to vote as soon as they come out of jail while they're on parole or on probation, when you couple that with, let's say, the veto around paraphernalia, mm-hmm. and smoking marijuana in public, leaving those two in there. So, I mean, what's the politics of this? I mean, the majority of the legislature voted for it, obviously, or they wouldn't be on his desk. Yet the vetoes were there. So let me get. So with Brian, we'll go to Charles. What's your political analysis about why this happened?
Look, I think, you know, I think that, first of all, it's interesting because a number of these bills that were vetoed, there are either margins, you know, veto-proof majorities on these bills, or the majorities are very close. I think one or two of these bills, the difference between the House vote and a veto-proof majority is a simple vote or two, which is, you know, which is not tremendously difficult to get. And you could see a possibility here where, you know, leadership, if they wanted to, could probably get these votes, and so that'll be the interesting thing to watch going into the session when they reconvene in January. Look, I mean, I think for the most part, I mean, the governor made it pretty clear in his veto messages. I mean, some of these were definitely for policy. The hotel tax, he was concerned about getting involved in an issue of litigation. And I should point out in an earlier interview with the Press Association for, you know, marking his 100 days, he was pretty clear about the fact that he did not necessarily think that the online hotel tax bill was the creation of a new tax. And his letter sort of reflects that, and he cites the ongoing litigation between the comptroller and some of these companies as the reason for not getting involved and for vetoing this bill. I think that the policy here is, it's very definitely, he's very definitely putting his fingerprint on, I guess, the five bills, technically six if you want to count the cross file, that he had the most concern about.
I think the other part is that, you know, there are some ironies in some of these vetoes. So on the marijuana issue, you now can have less than, I guess, an ounce of marijuana and not
get arrested,
but you cannot buy a bong to put it in.
Right.
Which is, you know, I mean, what's worse, you know, and those kind of issues come up. I think the issue regarding, you know, the decision not to fund the extra money for GCI, I don't think people didn't think he wasn't going to sign it, but it was not really a big surprise. You know, he kept saying, well, I'm going to put the money in the pension fund. And every time they went about it, it was kind of like, well, you can't do that because the way the legislation is written is that if you don't use it for education, it goes back into the general fund. And then the other part of that was, you know, he claimed that he was going to take money from out of the budget that actually builds things and move it so that he could open a new barracks for state police down in Annapolis. And I just don't see any of that happening. And I think And the other part of that is the poison pill that was put into some legislation towards the end of the session that said, okay, if you don't do this, then this will happen. And that relates to full funding of the GCI indexing going forward. And I'm guessing that the governor is looking at all of his legal options as to whether or not he can fight it. And I just don't see any way he can at this point.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Charles. I don't know that there's necessarily any way that you can fight the GCEI mandate bill. He bought himself effectively the governor bought himself effectively a year on GCEI in terms of not funding it as a non-mandatory formula. But the bill that he's going to allow to become law will make that mandatory for him and every other governor hereafter.
So I was wondering in these vetoes where I was thinking about this, and maybe you guys will just say this is not the case, but when you look at this, the ones we've been talking about, then the Felons Right to Vote Act, it was put in by both Senate and House. I was shocked about how it went through after the vociferous debate in both floors, but it did go through, and you look at that and not taxing for online travel companies to collect sales tax in that bill. And he vetoed that as well. I wonder, just talking with Brian again, if this in some ways is not playing, is a political question, playing to the base that put him in office, which is a relatively conservative and white suburban and rural base of voters who really put him over the top. Is that part of the politics of this?
Look, I mean, I think any answer I could give you would be speculative. I have to stick to what we at this point know about what the governor has said about this. I mean, I think he's, you know, in terms of the felons voting rights bill, he drew a clear line between what he believed was the completion of a sentence. It's a stance that we heard on the floor during these debates that was pretty common from the conservative side of the aisle, the governor very clearly believes that you have not completed your sentence until you complete your parole or probation, and at which point, you know, the right to vote, you know, comes back to the convicted felon. In terms of the hotel tax, I mean, you know, all I have to go on is his statement and what he has said in previous interviews, which is that he did not see this as a new tax. So clearly, he was not linking this to his no new taxes pledge. He very clearly acknowledges that this is something that is on the books that the online companies are in some way collecting, and it is the remittance to the state that is of issue, and this is something that's working its way through the courts. And look, that's not an uncommon stance for either governors or the General Assembly to take up. In fact, I would point out that the General Assembly delayed acting on some of the issues related to Uber a year ago because there was an ongoing Public Service Commission issue, and they were very clearly hesitant to get involved while the PSC was still working through that issue.
Right, and I think and Brian's correct, that what you get is...
I need you to mark this down, Mark. You said I was correct. That almost never happens.
Right, so far, let me say, gentlemen, this happened twice in this conversation.
Usually we respectfully disagree, but I'm going to agree with him on this issue, is that, you know, when the courts are in play, do you want to step into that minutia, if you will? And that was part of the argument that the folks who were against this tax made. You know, it's too early to step in and let the courts work it out. And then if we need legislation, let's move back to that. The other thing I thought was very interesting, and Brian, I don't know about you, the number of bills he let go into law without signing and why they and how he kind of couched his reasoning behind them. I think it was about making sure he was consistent with policy questions, i.e., I want to slow the growth of government, and I don't want to be a party to anybody who's trying to increase the growth of government.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. If you look at some of the bills that he allowed to pass into law, I mean, especially some of the social issues bills that he allowed to pass without signature, I think that's been consistent with his campaign. There were a number of times where the Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown attempted to drag him into debates on social issues, and the governor ran a fairly disciplined campaign and said that he wanted to talk strictly about fiscal issues and growth of government. And I think that you see an extension of the campaign here. where he is consistently, sticking to those issues and not really getting involved. There were a number of conservative groups who were urging the governor to veto some of the LGBT bills related to. Related to the in vitro and a couple of other things, and they sort of understood that they couldn't do this through a referendum issue, so they were hoping that the governor would be the last line of defense, and clearly the governor is sticking to his guns as he did in the campaign and not getting involved in some of these social issues.
Sure, and the other part here real quick, Mark, is that the governor understands how the legislature felt about the former governor, Robert Ehrlich, after they went through a bunch of machinations and they went back and forth. He doesn't want to make an enemy of this legislature because they can kill stuff. And, it might hurt them, but they still have that part of that purse strings. He can always put in more, but they can take out more, too.
Well, I want to come back to something in a moment, but I didn't want to leave out the not vetoing the proposed civil asset forfeiture reform bill when it comes to things that are taken from people who are arrested. And the governor is saying that his quote was, Maryland is currently facing a heroin epidemic. The individuals involved in the manufacturing and sale of drugs are profiting from the deaths and ruined lives and they are creating. And when I talk about that and just want them to profit from their crimes. But this in some ways also goes against his own conservative base and their worries about forfeiture and the power of government. So I'm curious how you both analyze that one.
This governor has always been about law and order. One of his largest constituencies are the police force and the state police forces across the state. They have supported him unanimously because they felt as though, I think, that they weren't given the type of stature under the previous administration. And, that was clear when he came up to Pikesville, when he announced that, hey, I'm going to open the Annapolis Barracks, and I'm going to add 100,000 more. State police officers.
100,000 police officers.
Right. But when that's a kind of like, see, I'm helping you, and I want you to help me. And I don't think any of us are under any kind of cloud thinking that, the governor is going to play to his constituents.
And a thought on you, Brian, before we have to move on, Mr. Sears?
No, I think I'll let Charles's comments stand.
That's the third time in a row.
God, we're going to be in deep trouble if we're agreeing.
You guys are always entertaining whether you agree or not. That's and true. Also informative. And I appreciate you always taking time for the program. Brian Sears, of course, government reporter for the Daily Record. And Charles Robinson, political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Mark.
Thanks.
We're going to take just a 10-second break here. Come right back with Jamal Bryant, who is going to join us to talk about the demonstration on 395 yesterday. Stay with us. Like a